It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro. Backstage with the golden grace. Tales from the stands to the batter's cage. The kind of stories that'll keep you engaged. Backstage with the golden grace. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. Tom Burgoyne along with John Brazier. And, John, we have been talking about having this guy on for a long, long time.
Now, I'm not just saying this because he's on the air right now. He's about to come on with us. But it is one of my all-time favorite.
Yeah, but you say that about everybody.
No, but this one has a special place in my heart he's a great storyteller. I stole one of his sayings that for the last 30 years I've been saying it. And let's just bring him on right away.
Well, you know what, John? This guy played in had 14 seasons in the bigs, right? Five different teams. He's been with the Kansas City Royals for a long time as a commentator. That's how maybe people know him now. But I'm going to introduce him as ex-Philly number 14, Rex the Wonder Dog Hudler. What's up, Hud?
Oh, you guys got goosebumps running down my redheaded spine.
Nice.
It's a beautiful thing. What a wonderful time of year. I enjoyed the fighting this year all the way. My heart broke, too, like a lot of people's. But you know what? There's next year, and let's hope that they can try to do it 3 years in a row, which is very difficult. But, guys, look, the grand game is so special. And it's played by some of the world's greatest athletes, and you guys have a whole team of them. So a lot of fun this season. You guys have to be pretty pleased with how it turned out, although, I mean, you want to win it all, but what's wrong with going close to it all the way?
Well, yeah. Looking back on it, obviously, since we've got some time removed, yes, we can say it was a great season. But I got to say, this one, even though we were one game away last year, this one burned because we saw a clear path, and the team was on such a roll, and the team was so much fun. Last year was fun, too, but this year's was just really, like, you could tell these guys loved each other, and just, you know, all the celebrations, you know, after the games, when they started the game, would get the water dumped over them, and there was a special bond between the fans and the players, and I think that's what made the ending so harsh.
Great. Look, when the Royals came to town for a three-game series over the weekend, it was really special. It was in August, and you could tell everything that you just said, that the fans showed up like it was a playoff game. It was the first time that the fans started cheering for Turner.
Yep.
Remember?
Yep.
Whoever spurred the fans on to do that, it was awesome. And to be in that ballpark and to feel the energy, a playoff atmosphere in August, you could tell right away that the Fightins were in the battle for sure. And the passionate fans, I'll never forget it. My little short time there was a beautiful thing to be able to experience the Fightin' Phils. But you know what? It's the people. It's the people that made me and Jennifer want to come back and live there and be a part of that city. Man, because there's so much passion there and people care. And you're not just a number. And, just a wonderful place. We got encouraged. We had just had our son Cade with Up syndrome. You know, Will calls it Down syndrome. But we had just had him, and we went to Philly, and the people, they lifted me up, and they made us feel like we were special, and they congratulated us, and you know, we up to that point had not had that positivity anywhere, let alone Philly. The reputation of supposedly the Philly fans have, I saw the exact opposite, nothing but love and encouragement.
Yeah, that's. I'm so happy you said that, Hud, because John and I are from here. You know, whether it's a bad, you know, reputation these fans get or the city gets, it's insane. It's the city of brotherly love is so true, and there's a lot of heart in the city, as you know. And how cool was it when you were back here? I know. I think Scott Brandreth, our director of promotions, knew you were coming back in and said, "Hey, we should have Rex on the field for photo day. That's when we bring all our fans down on the field. We have our players, but we also have broadcasters and whoever else is in town, but so great that you were able to, you know, walk around with your Philly jersey on, which you haven't done for a long time.
Right. We had to get clearance through the Royals, make sure you're okay, you know, wearing a Phillies uniform.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, but look, that was really special. That never happens because you're rarely in a town that you played in, and I was never a star player. I was always a guy that was a blue-collar worker, played different positions, could help out, fill a spot anywhere. But that particular day, Brazier, John, you're unbelievable. I got to the booth around 3 o'clock, and there's Brazier waiting for me. And I'm like, whoa, John, what's up? I hadn't seen him in a while. And then he goes, hey, Hud, I'm going to get you a jersey, and we want you to come down on the field and hang out. And I go, dude, there's nobody going to know me. They didn't know me when I played there. How are they going to know me now? He goes, Hud, just come on down. And so I had to accept the invitation because it was so exciting. And to be a part, to feel like I was a part of the Phillies again, really warmed my heart. And to go on that field and then to get a selfie with Schwarber.
Schwarber
was down there. I walked up to him, and he looked at me, and he's like, who's this guy? And I go, hey, Schwarber, I was fighting at one time. Can I get a selfie? And he had a big old smile, and I got a little picture with him. And then there was a guy that was on the field that was doing the interviewing with the players and with different people in the Phillies, and he interviewed me. And I'm thinking, sir, look, I'm the last guy you probably want to interview here. But it was so fun, and of course the Royals and all of our front office people that were there saw that on the field. They're like, Hud, you must have been a star here. And I went, no, I was not a star. But had so much fun, loved it. You know, the 3 days there to feel that energy was really something good, especially for our young players to see that.
Yep. Well, let's talk about your time with the Phillies because, you know, as Tom mentioned, you had a long career. You're with the you were drafted by the – well, let's go all the way back because you were drafted by the Yankees, but you almost didn't go baseball because you played another sport.
Yeah, you know, I had a full ride to a place called Notre Dame, and then there was a no-name quarterback named Joe Montana that would have been my quarterback. And that was in 1978. They had just come off a national title. Winning the Cotton Bowl the year before in 77. And then what an incredible run it was there. My senior year in high school, it was just way too overwhelming. Took my 5 visitations to the colleges. You know, I went to Notre Dame and Michigan State. Kirk Gibson showed me around the campus there. I went to Berkeley. I went to UCLA and Arizona State and did all that stuff. And then baseball was the last sport of the year in high school for me. And I played to have fun because I was already signed a letter of intent. And so baseball, I was relaxed and played. Here's 30 scouts on the side of the field in all my games. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I love this attention. Look, this is my last time I'll ever play baseball again, probably. I'm going to show these guys what I could do. And so instead of playing tight, I played sphincter free. I like to use, you know, that's a term that we can get away with on the podcast, I think.
Yep.
But so you, when you play like that, you go ahead. That's when you're at your best. And I remember the scouts would call in my home in Fresno, California, off the wall. Of course, we didn't have cell phones then, so I would hear my mom pick up the phone, and I would hear her say, "Don't waste your pick. My son's going to college. He's going to get a degree at Notre Dame. Don't waste your pick because he's not going to sign."
Right.
So I heard her saying that constantly. I'm going, Mom, really? Are you making the right decision? Don't worry about it, son. So sure enough, I came home from draft day. I came home from school. No big deal. I didn't stay home for the draft. Back then, you know, they let you know by a phone call or by a telegram, I think it was. Anyway, so I walked in the door. Mom, anybody draft you? Anybody call today? She goes, yeah, the damn Yankees drafted me.
Yeah. So thrilled.
Go, Mom, what'd you tell them? I told them they wasted their pick. I said, you told them that? Mom, way to go. She goes, they'll call back. So a week goes by, nothing, no calls, no nothing. I said, Mom, you scared them off. She goes, nope, they'll come around, son. Sure enough, a guy named Al Rosen, the vice president for the New York Yankees and Steinbrenner, and then Jack Butterfield, a top executive, show up in their suits at my front door. My mom sends me out to Mama Mia's Pizzeria to get me a pizza and says, come back in 45 minutes, son. Okay, Mom. You know, we hadn't talked about it or anything. She just sent me out. I come back in, come back to my house. I try to get in the front door. It's locked. I knock on my own front door. My mom opens the door and goes, "Congratulations, son. You're a Yankee."
Wow. What turned it? The money. I guess.
Mr. Steinbrenner's cake, man.
The cake.
She didn't want me around to jump at any of their first offers. So that's why she sent me out.
Wow.
She knew they were going to be talking, negotiate. So she got it all the way up to 150 grand. And then said, "Okay, well, he's yours."
That's true.
And so, go ahead.
No, you're good.
Hey, so then all of a sudden, everything changed, and now Mr. Steinbrenner wants to meet me. So they flew me to New York City, and I got to meet the boss. And all I said was, "Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir." Because I was so intimidated. I'm 17 years old, and Mr. Steinbrenner invites me in his office at pinstripe carpeting and baseball gloves for furniture. It was like one of the best recruiting trips I was ever on, and I already signed. So I went up to upstate New York and Oneonta and started my career, and had no idea that it was going to take me parts of 10 years in the minor leagues to become established in the big league. So it was a real rough journey for me growing up, learning how to handle life in baseball and how to handle stuff and just all on the field, off the field. I took my lumps. And then I got tired of running.
Yeah, this is the part I love, because you wrote a letter, right, to Steinbrenner?
Well, yeah. You know what? This was about my sixth year with the Yankees, and I had been in A-ball almost all 6 years since the Florida State League, which never happens in the modern game today. Never a guy going to be 6 years in the minors. So we're getting ready to go to Bay Harbor Inn. That's George's hotel he owned. And so we stayed there. And so I put together a real short note and said, "Dear Mr. Steinbrenner, I would have already graduated from Notre Dame by now, would have already started my professional football career. And instead, I'm my sixth year in A-ball, I haven't even gotten out of A-ball yet. And I'm presently hitting 300. Would you please consider a promotion? All my best, Rex Hudner." Okay, take it to the Bay Harbor Inn. I took my letter, folded it nicely, put it in, and offered it to the secretary that was there at the front desk. And I said, "Ma'am, when Mr. Steinbrenner comes to town sometime this summer, would you please give this to him?" She goes, "Oh, sure, I'll take it up to him. He's here right now." And I went, "Oh my gosh, man,
nice.
My booty got tied. I got tied because I was, you write a letter to George Steinbrenner like that, that took a lot of hair." And so I was so upset at not being moved, because Steinbrenner, he would buy all of his players. So he'd buy them at the top level, all these free agents, so it logjammed the system. Nobody ever moved out of the system. So frustration came out a little bit. We get to the game in St. Petersburg, Al Lang Field there, where we used to train, or where we used to play the Cardinals there. And there he is, sitting in the stands with Stump Merrill, George Steinbrenner, 4 o'clock in the afternoon in St. Petersburg. Nobody in the stands but those two guys. And I'm out there playing catch. Man, I'm getting my stomach all worked up because I'm a little bit nervous. And so when Stump Merrill's done with his meeting, he comes down the field, and I said, "Stumpy, did he mention anything about the letter?" And Stump Merrill chewed on his tobacco to make it make the drama even better. He spits right in front of me, and he goes, "Kid, he loved it." And I went, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe that. It's so good." So I went in the clubhouse and blew the commode up because my belly was just boiling. I was rolling. I was so nervous. And then played the game, got a couple hits for him, and then bust back to Fort Lauderdale. And the next morning at 6 o'clock, phone rang. "You're going to AAA, pal."
Yeah, nice. It worked. It worked.
Yeah, it did. It worked. The boss said, "Hey, look, I like this kid." So, of course, I had a talk with myself on the airplane flying there to Columbus, Ohio. "Self, you pop off to a guy like that, and you go up there and lay an egg, you're in trouble."
Exactly. But you didn't, Rex. You didn't lay the egg, man. Look at you.
No. I went off, and next thing you know, they're talking about trading Willie Randolph for me, and I'm going, so I could become second baseman there, and I'm, thank God they didn't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That would have been too much. I know. And then from the Yankees, I know you went, Orioles, Expos, but I know in the middle there, you had a little time in Japan. What was your experience in Japan like?
Some incredible season. I'd tell a lot of people it's one of the best summers I ever had in baseball, but I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings here in America. But, man, it was learning a different culture, they paid me $1 million, and I had just come off a $400,000 contract with the Cardinals, which was good money. I was always happy with being in the big leagues. But $1 million to play baseball in the summer in Japan?
Yeehaw!
Dinner. Let's go. Pack the bag. We're out. So sure enough, we went out there. And now, this was in 1993. And in 1992, I was with the Cardinals. And so Tom Selleck had been training for this baseball movie he was going to make.
Yeah, sure.
And so, he came around to the Cardinals and took BP with our team, did all the schmoozing, took photographs with the wives and all that stuff, because that's when Tom Selleck was Tom Selleck.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was fun. And then so all of a sudden, Mr. Baseball comes out, and I didn't know it. The next year, 93, we're flying to Japan, me and Jennifer, and there's Tom Selleck and Mr. Baseball. They showed the movie on the 13-hour flight. Wow. So I watched it. I kind of enjoyed it, but I was guarded because here is this guy who goes to Japan, he's American, and learns how to play baseball, just what I was heading into. And so then experienced 9 months of the Japanese game, including winning the Japan World Series. And then we get back on the plane 9 months later, and we fly home, and guess what movie they're playing again?
Mr. Baseball.
It's Mr. Baseball. And, man, I laughed my backside off because I had just experienced it. Now I saw the whole movie the way it should be through the eyes of a guy who just did it. And I loved it. That's why it was one of my favorite baseball movies. But to experience the love and the joy that people had for players, there was no booing. They didn't boo. They always had a real self-appreciation of players and their work. And they treated players like they were matinee idols. It was amazing the energy that the crowd brought. But you know what? I didn't care. I didn't care what they said about me. I didn't care what they wrote about me because I couldn't read any of this stuff or hear or understand any of their language. All I did was smile and loved on the people and gave the peace sign and just went out and played ball and hit 300. I was the only American to hit 300 in the top 10. I learned how to hit a breaking ball better. And I had no idea that was the season that was going to get me back in shape and actually get me into a better playing condition and learn how to hit that breaking ball. And I came back to the big leagues, and I already had 5 years in. Going to Japan really brushed me up and it freshened me up. And then I was able to get the rest of my service time in and get my full pension
now,
because of that.
Well, I was going to say, if I remember correctly, too, not only just your playing ability over in Japan, but you were also infamous for something you did something in St. Louis. I know you ate a June bug and you won a bet.
Yeah.
But over in Japan, you also didn't you eat something over there and they made a big cartoon book out of Rex Huther, facing? Tell that story.
What?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I do have a little character in me and I have some fun. I like to motivate my team, all those kind of things. Yeah, the Cardinal thing was a June bug flew on my hat sitting on the dugout. Sitting in the top steps of the dugout. This is before they had the screens in front of the dugout. Anyway, they said, "Hey, eat it." So I wasn't totally prepared to eat it, the June bug, until I finally thought this would be a pretty good business opportunity right here. Okay, how much you give me?
Yes.
Tom Pagnozzi goes, $10. I said, $10? Shake yourself. You're a big leaguer, man. That's embarrassing. He goes, $100. And now we're talking. I went on down the line. 100, 100, 100, 100. Finally, I'm getting close to Whitey Herzog, the manager, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get in trouble. This is right in the middle of the game. We're getting beat by. So I started back down the other way. Eight guys said, hey, we'll give you $800. I said, okay. They said, we have a stipulation. You have to chew the bug. And I said, okay, I got a stipulation. I don't chew anything until I get the cash in my hand. This is the middle of the game. The guys all get up. They go into their valuable box. They get $100. Even back then, players had $100 in their wallet. So, the money's not like it is today. It still was pretty good. So they slap all these hundreds in the middle of the game. I put that cash in my uniform pocket. I pulled that June bug off my hat, man, and chewed him up like a sunflower seed. And I showed him on my tongue to the guys. And I went, and they just freaked out. Now, okay, so I told that story to my teammate, Jack Howell, who was my only American teammate. So we're on the artificial turf field in Japan, and there was an earthworm out there. And he picks up the earthworm, and he tells my guys on a Monday workout day where there's nobody in the stands, there's no coaches around or nothing, and he tells them, hey, he'll eat this worm. How much will you pay him? And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, there's a lot of strange things that they eat over there. But so this won't be a big deal. Well, obviously, they thought that was pretty wild and maybe unclean. And they were all cracking up, laughing, and saying, no way. So Jack raised $2,000.
Wow.
American, a lot of yen. So he told me, he looked at me, and he's holding this earthworm. He goes, Hud, $2,000. And I went over there, and I just scooped down and opened my mouth, and he dropped that sucker in there. And I started chewing the earthworm, thinking the earthworm would get my intestine, and he would lay eggs, and I'm thinking all this stuff. But so as I'm swallowing, I'm chewing him up, my teammates are freaking out. And so I just started doing push-ups and looking at him and kind of acting like I was going crazy. Well, that was just to break up the morale. That was just for a laugh. And the practice is over, and media was not allowed in the locker rooms in Japan. So I walk out of the locker room, and there's 100 photographers taking my picture outside of the locker room. And I'm thinking to myself, uh-oh, what happened? What's going on here? And they all had smiles on their faces. So I figured out somebody told them.
Yeah.
So I'm searching around. I looked in my coat. I had a toothpick in my coat pocket. So I pulled out the toothpick, and I started picking my teeth in front of all these guys taking pictures.
Beautiful.
And I went, oh, and they cracked up. The next day, 7 major publications in Tokyo, there was my picture on the front page, one of my buddies told me, crazy American eats worm.
Right. And did they make a cartoon, too, of you, like, facing a giant worm?
Yeah, they did. The players brought those in, and they showed me some of the stuff they were putting in there. And it just cracked me up. I mean, you couldn't get away with that in America. But I laughed. And I said, oh, my God, these people. So they really got a kick out of it. They sent me my pink slip after we won the Japan Series, first time in 25 years. And I cried because I was thinking, man, I'm going to stay here the rest of my career and take care of my family with this kind of cake. Man, that's good money. And so they fired me. And then I only played 1 year there. But even now, up to today, in 23, the fans still remember me because of the earthworm. Eating the earthworm was something that no one ever did there. And so for me, I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. And Rex, you know, I've been fortunate enough to go over with the Fanatic. I've been over there, I guess, 4 or 5 times. And it is funny. The Fanatic has his hot dog launcher here. He's always wanted to convert it to a sushi launcher and shoot some of the, you know, crazy raw fish into the crowd, the Tokyo Dome. Never happened. But Rex, they never brought you back over for the American-Japanese series, you know, that happens every other year?
No. But anyway, hey, since you brought up that your hot the Fanatic hot dog shooting machine that he had, so how I got discovered and started my television career after my baseball career was right there in Philly. In 97, maybe halfway through the year, we were 35 games out of first place. Terry Francona's first year managing the Phillies.
Yeah.
And so Good Morning America comes to Philadelphia,
yes.
And they're doing a story with the Phillies about you know, what motivates you guys. You know, you're 35 games out, and we're not even at the All-Star break yet. You know, and so they were asking Schilling and Dalton, and they were talking to Morandini, and they were interviewing all these, you know, star players. And then they came to me, and they asked me that question, and I got a little offended. I go, what? Are you kidding me? These people paid me a good salary to come here to play for them. And for some of these people that can't hardly afford a ticket, they come here. What do you think I got, 2 gears, 3 gears? There's only one way we play. We don't give in. Our careers are so short. Anyway, I fed them full, man, and I was a little on the edge with that questioning. And then that night, I accidentally hit a game-winning home run off Tom Glavine. And so they came to me after the game, and they said, hey, will you meet us in the morning at 6 o'clock? And I go, ooh, 6 o'clock? That's a little early for ball players. But ABC, man, I'll put my suit on. I'll come and stand at home plate at Veterans Stadium.
Home plate event. Hey, Hud, I was with you that morning, if you remember. We're both standing at
okay.
home.
Yeah. Okay. So they told me to bring a baseball glove. So I was in my suit. I had my nice dress shoes on, and I wasn't. It was 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was nursing a sore hamstring a little bit at the time. But I had no idea that the power of that Oscar Mayer Wiener shooting thing could shoot the thing about 100 feet in the air. So I ran out to the mound after the interview was over, and they go, "Hey, yeah, we're going to catch a hot dog from the Fanatic." Sure, no problem. Had my glove on.
Right.
What could go wrong?
The wind catches it. And man, I had to take off and I had to put it in another gear to get to the hot dog. And here it is. I got to catch this thing. I'm not going to drop it. And my hand starts tightening up on me. I'm thinking, oh boy, Gary Francona finds out that I hurt my hammy running after a hot dog. Man, I'm in trouble. So fortunately it didn't hurt. But then I made the catch on the dead run. Okay. So I catch it, no big deal. And I'm walking back to home plate, and I don't know if you remember this, Tom, but the production team was all laughing, cracking up on the ground. They were laughing. I'm going, what happened? What'd I do? What happened? And they said, that was great live TV.
Yeah, baby.
We loved it. Thank you. So, okay, no big deal. Went back home. Two or three weeks later, I get a call from ABC saying, we want you to be a correspondent with Charles Gibson in the post.
Wow. Tremendous.
Yeah. So see that moment and coming to Philly and just saying yes and going out and just having fun and doing that got me the break I needed for the last 40, or I don't know how many years I've been out of baseball since 98. I've been in television doing baseball. So I have a great debt of gratitude for the Fightin' Phils. Even though it was a rough time that I was there, it still was a blessing to be there.
Well, yeah, and a gratitude for the hot dog launcher. That's awesome. No, and Hud, what I remember about that, and John, here we are. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. It's still dark out. They had the lights on at the vet, but the ground crew had prepared home plate. They had, raked the dirt. The lines were down, painted the home plate because it's national TV, And there's Hud, and, usually, and this, Hud, you ask a player to, be here at the ballpark at 6 in the morning. It's like, oh, my gosh. But I remember standing there, and you were talking about how awesome and how much you appreciated, being like a leadoff hitter, being the first one to step into that dirt that nobody has touched. And just, you went off. I remember that morning and that's why I knew, man, this guy's a great dude because, he just appreciates being here. And, and every day in baseball, you can just tell you love. Which I always will remember that morning, Hud.
Thank you, because that's one of my favorite moments. But really, the best was when Jim Salisbury, the excellent Inquirer sports writer, sat down with me in spring training before I even got to Philly for opening day. And I shared with him about Cade. We had just had a little boy with Down syndrome, Jennifer and I did. And I remember sharing that with him and how compassionate he was and how he just listened and how he wrote. And so, several weeks go by, and I'm wondering to myself, I wonder when that article will ever come out. So sure enough, we get back to Philly. We started on the road that year in 97. We started on the road, and so we hit all the cities out there. So probably 12 games, and I was 0 for 15 or so. And here I am, the high-priced player for the Phillies. And Terry Francona, he hired me to babysit the 12 rookies that he had. That was that was the whole deal.
Yeah.
So anyway, I get to the ballpark, and when the Inquirer came over with their photographer, we were going to get a picture with Cade and I all dressed in this nice little outfit, and I had an outfit on, but I was changing him, and the guy was taking pictures of him, so here it is, opening day, Philadelphia Inquirer. This is back when there weren't too many computers. Everybody still read the Inquirer. So on front page, it had a picture of me holding my son up, and he didn't have a shirt on, and he's a little baby, and I was guzzling him, and that was the picture on the front page, and I'm thinking to myself, oh no. And sure enough, I go to the ballpark that day, and I was 0 for Philly so far, and so I get in the box, 67,000 fans screaming on opening day. And I got a little jam shot off Sterling Hitchcock, a lefty, jabbed me, hit it over the shortstop's head. So for me, I still could run at that age. I was old, but I still could run. So I took off out of that box, and I had issues with a hamstring earlier, but my other hamstring blew on that particular hit. And so I was at second base, and bam,
you know, I felt bad. You know, John Vukovic, I love Vuki. Vuki was so cool. He looks at me. I'm in second base, and he goes, is she a little hurt? Is she something wrong? You know, Brace, is that Vukovic right there?
Yes.
Okay, so I had to come off the field. Oh, and it wasn't good. So, you know, the fans, they put me where I should have been. They put me in there up there with Santa Claus, and they let me have it. And I remember the feeling I had. But then it just went right back to all of a sudden now, the next few days when I got to the ballpark, I'm getting buckets of fan mail. Like Dalton or Schilling or, you know, star players of that team would get from the fans, buckets of it. I got a huge – and I'm sitting in the middle of that Philly locker room opening that fan mail, and these fans are saying – they're sending pictures of their kids. There's nothing – nobody's sending me my autograph or cards to autograph and send back to them. They're all sending me letters of congratulations and telling me, my kid does this. Your kid's going to be so special. Congratulations. And up to that point, Jennifer and I, whenever we tell our friends or anything about our new son, they would always say, because they didn't know what to say, oh, we're sorry. And I that hurt, because I just had a little boy and people are telling me they're sorry for what? So I never lost it on anybody or anything. I just kind of took that in and kind of, you know, said, well, they just don't know what to say. But the Philadelphia fans knew what to say. So there I am weeping, opening these letters. And, you know, we didn't have any cell phones then either. And so the guys in between batting practice, the players in the locker room, would all read their newspapers and their sporting news and stuff. And so I was getting caught up in my mail and getting caught up with all this congratulations. And I was weeping. I feel like weeping today because I remember the feeling. So I looked up. I put my cards down and I looked up around me. And there was Dalton. There was these guys. And they all had the paper. And they put it back up again, but they were all watching me over the paper. You know, they were looking at me. The paper was down, and they were acting like they were reading, but they were watching me open this mail and getting emotional. And so when I looked up at them, and they all put their paper up, I felt like they weren't watching. I went, man, fellas, hey, I don't mean to bring the clubhouse down, man. I just, you know, this is kind of a grieving time for me. It's just I'm still processing having a little boy with Down syndrome. Darren Dalton stood up. He comes over to me and he goes, Hud, we got your back. You are a fighting Phil. We love you. You're a huge part of this team. We will do anything and everything we can for you. And I'll never forget that. That's Darren Dalton.
Yeah,
too.
And I love how you turn that around. And Rex, you had that, you know, the charity function, Team Up for Down Syndrome. And, you know, I alluded to earlier in the very beginning, I said, I've stolen one of your, or borrowed or stolen, however you want to say it. You were in Reader's Digest for your positive attitude because you had a quote that said, be a fountain, not a drain. And I've taken that for the last 30 years and ran with it. People attribute that quote to me, but it really should be me giving that attribute to you. So. Be a fountain, not a drain. But that golf outing, going back to that, remember that you had
Bruce Hornsby.
Yeah, you had a Waynesboro golf club here in Philadelphia area, and you had Bruce Hornsby play on the golf course, right? Remember you had him set up like outside the 18th green.
It was unbelievable.
But he had a bad arm, right? I went to the dinner. I didn't go to the golf outing. I went to the dinner, and he played the piano with a bad arm. So did he play golf? Didn't he have a broken?
I don't think he played golf. I think he played. He played piano.
Well, played the piano with one hand.
Right.
It's unbelievable,
yeah, he had an injury, but you know, so when I asked him about the gig originally, I said, hey, man, Bruce, now I got to know him several years earlier. You know, when you're a ball player, sometimes, you know, a lot of these players, Geddy Lee, a lot of rock stars or people, movie stars like to come to the ballpark. So you get to meet guys like that, which is one of the many, many wonderful things about being a major leaguer. And so he was my buddy, and he goes, Hud, yeah, you know what? Matter of fact, I'm auditioning some new bandmates, and we need to play together. So, yeah, we'd be happy to come out there to Philly. And so I remember playing, and they're warming up during the – you know, we're all golfing, and we're warming up. We're hearing this band. You know, this is a big league band. And they stayed, and once the event was over, all the people said – but what blew me away was the Philly fans, and, you know, and their hearts, they're so philanthropic, that there was everyone there. The Flyers were there. Hextall, Lindros, some of their football players. I mean, there was everybody from all the sports line was there. And you'd have thought that I was some kind of rock star. But really what it was is people were rallying behind
team up for Down syndrome.
Awesome.
And so that started it. That started our organization. We still run it today. It was 27 years now. And we're so thankful that we can, that we had Cade, that now that we can share his joy with others and also help the special needs community wherever we go. And
that's
so great. It's just been a huge blessing. We love it. We're so thankful to still be in baseball and to tell our stories and share them that other people might benefit from.
That's great. Hey, Rex, well, you got to tell the story. One of my favorite stories is when you're playing for the Angels, you played second base, and you were playing in the historic game where Cal Ripken broke the Iron Man record. Tell what happened in that game.
Oh, boy, 21-31 now. I found out in April of that season in 1995. I was reading a sporting news, and it said, if there's no rainouts or there's no game cancellations, the California Angels will be the team that's in Baltimore when he breaks the record. And I saw that in April. And I was going, oh, my gosh. So that event's in September. So I go to the traveling secretary in April, and I said, hey, Mr. Koss, hey, could you please – get me 3 extra rooms outside of my room in Baltimore in September. And he was kind of an older fella, and he was like, wow, kid, that's a long ways away. That's 4 or 5 months from now. What do you got going? I said, well, we have a family party and a family function that we want to attend. So the year goes by, no rain out, no delays. And we're 2 weeks away from going to Baltimore, and the traveling secretary comes up to me and goes, hey, kid, are you willing to sell us any of those rooms back that I can get? Because you can't get a room in Baltimore. There's no room. And I said, Frank, how many months ago did I order these rooms? He said, wow, 5 months ago. Yeah, okay, no, they're mine. I want them. So I knew this was going to be a historical game, and not just when he tied it, but when he broke it. And so I wanted to share it with my closest friends and my family. So I was able to get them all tickets. They all were there. And sure enough, and I had asked Cal Ripken for a bat, a souvenir bat, you know, way earlier in the season. And he never sent it over or nothing. And he's always really good about that. Okay, so I'm flying. We're flying there. My great friend Mark Langston, left-handed pitcher for the Angels. I said, Langley, I just got a good feeling Cal's going to send me a bat during this weekend. You know, and Langley goes, Hud, really? We know you think a lot of yourself, but come on, what makes you think that Junior is going to be thinking of you in a historical game? The president's going to be there. Anybody who's in baseball, dude, Hud, hang with him. So I laugh, whatever, get to the ballpark, and this is the night before, I believe, I think it was the first game, he ties it, and we play, and I'm in the lineup. That's what was shocking. Because I usually just hit against left-handed pitching, but there was a righty going. I think it was Moose. And then so I played in the game. Of course, went 0-4. Now the next day is the game where he ties it. That was the game when he broke it. And they pushed him out of the dugout. Remember that? The historic.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, never happened. An iconic moment in our history of baseball. And I'm at second base. And I'm watching him do this lap. And I'm watching him go to center field, left field, down the third baseline, coming off. And now he's going in front of our dugout, stopping and shaking hands with my teammates. And I'm telling myself, wouldn't you know it? You're out here. You're missing the moment. So I wanted to run across the field and go into the dugout, but I didn't because it wasn't about me. It was about just sucking up the moment and soaking all that up. So game starts. Game resumes. But that was the fifth inning. That's when the game's official in baseball.
Official. And they're using commemorative baseballs, correct?
Oh, yeah. So the baseballs were stitched in orange, and there was a big stamp, number 8, on the ball. So I walked up one of my at-bats, and I asked the home plate umpire, Larry Young, Larry, hey, can you give me a ball? He goes, nope, they're all counted. You can either catch a third out or you get a foul ball. Come on, man, really? So earlier in the game, Tim Salmon was our right fielder. It was a pop-up, a shallow. There's 2 outs. It's shallow, and I'm playing second base. So I go back, and I wave my hands, you know, letting the outfielder know, I got it. And Salmon calls me off for the third out, so he gets his souvenir. On the way back to the dugout, I'm saying some unkind words to him. You got to be kidding me. That was mine. Did you not see that? And he had a smile on his face and just kept running, saying, Hud, you'll get one. And so that's how important those things were. So the fifth inning is official. that inning starts, the bases end up getting loaded, and there's two outs. And the guy at first base on ball four was Rafael Palmeiro. He's going to he's coming to second base now, just walking because they walk him loaded. And he looks at me and he goes, "HUD, the baseball gods are here. Look who's coming up with the bases loaded right after the fifth inning when the sweep became official. I mean, you couldn't write this up any better." So I look and go, "Oh my gosh." So I walk back to second base praying like I always do and I always did. "God, could you please have him hit me the ball? I'm sorry to bother you. I'm sorry to trouble you right now, but I would really love a souvenir off of his bat." First pitch, jam shot, in on his hands. He flares one out to right center field. And I turned at second base and took off and looked up at that thing once. And I looked down to see where I was running. I'm going full speed. And I'm telling myself, "You got to break your neck. You got to catch this ball." And so my speed ended up carrying me underneath the ball on the dead run, and I caught it. And when I caught it, I shook it. Like, I can't believe it. It just happened. I got the third out. God answered my prayer. So I shook it one, two, three times. I shook it in disbelief that I had it. And the crowd in Camden Yards booed me.
They think you're showing up Cal.
Yeah, that's what they did. Yeah. So I was like a little blown away by both, but they thought I was showing him up. Ended up getting that souvenir. I ran right by my dugout teammates. We were in a pennant race then, too. We were in the race. And I left them all hanging, but I wanted to secure my baseball. And as I was running up to the locker room, I forgot the president was there, President Clinton. So anywhere in a ballpark, you don't run when the president's around. So I'm running up the tunnel, and these Secret Service men stepped right in the middle. Right, I mean, they blocked me from going to the locker room. I went, "Oh, hey, fellas, I just got my glove here, and I got the baseball." So they let me in. I hit that baseball. And then after the game, wouldn't you know it, I'm sharing that whole story with the media, and here comes the bat boy with a bat and said, "Here, this came over from the other side," and it was a bat signed by Cal Ripken.
Oh, beautiful.
That's so awesome. Not only did I get a ball, he remembered. He wanted to make that bat really special.
Oh, man.
And I have a special place for that bat that he signed me the night he broke Lou Gehrig's record.
That's awesome. And also, Rex, your wife sang the national anthem. Might be the only wife I know of a player that sang the national anthem for the Phillies. She was out there.
You helped her out, right?
Well,
John?
Jennifer was a little nervous, and I remember she saying, "John, can you sing with me? I'm a little nervous, and I'm forgetting the words." And I said, "Well, Jennifer, I don't really sing."
You don't
sing. And
then
she said, "Just mouth the words. I'll be looking at you." So then, Rex, all of a sudden, I said, "Sure," without really thinking about it. Next thing you know, the pressure's on me because I could have sent Jennifer down the wrong road, you know. but luckily, we got through it. But she's a But she's a recording artist, right? She's recorded some albums.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you know what? So I married up, you know.
And really?
For some reason, she chose my profession over hers because we had to give up one of them. We couldn't do what we both wanted to do, in order to have a successful marriage, so she put hers on the shelf. But she still did stuff. She dabbled, and every team we played for, she would tell them, "Hey, look, tell them I'll sing the anthem." So it was kind of, you know, she had an opera style voice. What knocked the socks off the people were in Montreal, because you know when you're an opera singer, you learn how to sing in different languages.
Yeah,
she could sing in French, and so she sang the Canadian anthem in French before a game in Montreal, and the people freaked out.
Oh, they were like, beautiful.
"What? A player's wife is singing our anthem in French?" And it was flawless. And thank God, because I wasn't that good for the Expos as well as many other teams, and I needed favor, and Jennifer got me favor there, man, because the people were freaking over. So praise God, we just celebrated 35 years, Brace.
And congratulations,
and Rex. Baseball, yeah, that's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me in my baseball career, meeting her in Columbus, Ohio, and tricking her into marrying me, and to give us four kids and to have help me get my 10 years in the majors was unbelievable. So thank you for letting me share that.
You're welcome. Well, Tom and I beautiful. Married up as well.
So. Yeah, we did. It's beautiful, Hut. All right, so Braze is waving his piece of paper over here. He works real hard on this quiz. So, Rex, when's the last time you took a test? Probably high school. Is that about right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, from my record, it wasn't that good.
Well, I think you're going to do well here. It's about yourself. It's multiple choice. There's eight questions.
Eight questions, right, John?
And Rex, we like to say that you get you need to get six out of eight. And I've got a shirt that we're going to send you. if you are able to get 6 out of 8. All right?
Okie dokie.
Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stop you with Frazier's Quiz.
Your first question.
Yeah,
you
buddy.
Went to Bullard High School in Fresno, California. Which of these celebrities did not go to Bullard? So 3 of them went to Bullard. 1 did not. Okay, you got to tell me which one did not. So here are the 4 celebrities. Kevin Federline, who's the entertainer, dancer, former husband of Britney Spears. Joe Cooper, NFL kicker who won a Super Bowl with the Giants in 1986. Kevin Sweeney, who was a quarterback at Fresno State, as well as the Cowboys and the 49ers. And actor-comedian Don Knotts. Which one did not go to Bullard High School?
Don Knotts.
Don Knotts did not. Did
Don
not
Knotts.
Go, did not go to Bullard.
You pulled
High
that
school.
One out of
That's
your
good.
Ear.
That's good. Don Knotts. Everyone
All right.
knows Don Knotts.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Number 2. You're hey, 1 for 1, Rex.
All those other guys are good friends of mine, too, by the way.
Oh, is that that's right? Tremendous. Oh, okay. That was an easy one. All right.
Nice.
You were drafted in the first round in 1978, as we mentioned. Which one of these players was not a first-round draft pick that year? So 3 of them were first-round draft picks in 78. 1 was not. Which one was not? Okay. Cal Ripken, Lloyd Mosby, Kirk Gibson, Bob Horner.
Cal Ripken Jr.
Cal Ripken Jr. was a second round pick. You are right.
How about that?
2 for 2.
That yeah. same year,
hey,
though,
look,
huh?
Hey, Tom, can you believe the Yankees made a – they took me over Cal Ripken Jr.?
That's awesome.
And Junior would have changed the history of the New York Yankees, man. So that was a
hey, Rex, he should have been asking you for your bet.
Exactly. Hey, the Yanks got the underdog, man. Right. Come on.
Right. All right. Two for two. 1979, you played for the – take yourself way back in the time machine. 1979, you played for the Fort Lauderdale Yankees in single A. Which one of these guys was not a teammate that year? So 3 of them were teammates. 1 was not. Okay. Who wasn't your teammate? Pat Tabler, Frankie Garland, Steve Balboni, Willie McGee. Pat Tabler, Frankie Garland, yeah. Steve Balboni, Willie McGee. So Frankie Garland is correct, and he's one of our lawyers.
Yeah, he works in the legal department.
He did not play for you back in 1979. Nope. All right, you were 3 for 3, Rex.
Yeah,
very good.
He's on a roll.
All right, in 1993, you played for the Yakult Swallows, the Japanese Central League, winning the Japanese Series Championship. By the way, Rex, just as a side note, down at Fantasy Camp this year, someone asked Charlie Manuel, you know, did they have a song for you when you came up to bat in Japan? And Charlie, in front of like 150 people, said, he's like, yeah, here's what they sang. And next thing you know, he sang the song in Japanese and sang for about 2 minutes. And like about 2 days before that, he told me he didn't really speak Japanese. And now he's singing his song that they did. So I guess, did they have a song for you in Japan? Did they sing
That's
a song
awesome.
For you? Yeah, isn't that great?
Oh, yeah. Hey, when you come up 4 times a game, you hear it every single night for, 81 games or however many games they played. But that is so good that Charlie could do it in Japanese. I can only do it in English.
Yeah, so that was pretty – all right, so you played for the Yakult Swallows. Which one of these was not a teammate? So 3 were a teammate back then. 1 was not, okay? Hopefully my pronunciation is good here. All right, Katsumi Hirasawa, Jack Howe, Masaharu Morimoto, and Tomohito Ito. So which one was not? So I'll say them again. Katsumi Hirasawa, Jack Howell, Masaharu Morimoto, or Tomohito Ito. And by the way,
the
one
second
is
one.
Jack Howell?
No, the second one from the last.
Oh, Masaharu Morimoto. You are correct, because Morimoto is an Iron Chef who's got
I
a great
say,
sushi,
Morimoto,
restaurant, sushi restaurant in Philadelphia. So...
I have a great recall of every team I played on and every teammate. That's the greatest thing about baseball is your teammates and getting to know people.
Yep. All right. Well, I think everyone would have a hard time forgetting you, Rex. All right. You are 4 for 4. Number 5 for the night. This might be one of the harder ones. For the 1997 Phillies, of which you were on, who led the team in hits that year? With 163, I'm gonna let you use Tom Burgoyne, who doesn't know this quiz, okay. as a lifeline. If you want to use him as your lifeline, you might not want to because he's not a very good lifeline.
Ooh, somebody actually had 163
hits on that team. In 1997. Was it Mickey Morandini, Scott Rowland, Rico Bronya, or Greg Jeffries? So Mickey Morandini, Scott Rowland, Rico Bronya or Greg Jeffries?
No lifeline needed. I'm going with the Hall of Famer, Scotty Boy.
No, it was actually Mickey Morandini.
I would have guessed him.
Hits. Yeah, that was Scott's.
Really?
Yeah, that was Scott's second year, right? Yes, that was his second year.
Yeah.
All right, and still you're still on a good roll. You're 4 for 5.
Okay.
I think you're going to do well in the last two. This one might be tough. You mentioned that you played wide receiver for Notre Dame, or you almost played wide receiver for Notre Dame. By the way, were you a? I wanted to ask you this question. Were you a slot guy, or were you more of like a big receiver, like an AJ Brown type?
Yeah, I was wide receiver.
You're more like a vertical.
Yeah, a white guy that could run was rare.
Okay. All right. So, who is the all-time leading wide receiver for Notre Dame in catches with 271 and yards, 3,686? So, who's the all-time leading wide receiver for Notre Dame? Again, I'll let you, since you didn't use your lifeline this time, you can, if you want, you can use it if it's going to help.
I don't know about my Notre
Dame. Was it Jeff Samardzija? Was it Golden Tate? Was it Michael Floyd? Or was it Tim Brown?
Was this in 1978?
No. This is their all-time leading wide receiver in catches and yards for Notre Dame. Was it still in the record books? Is it Jeff Samardzija, Golden Tate, Michael Floyd, or Tim Brown?
Samardzija.
I would have gotten this wrong. What would you have said, Tom?
I would have said Tim Brown.
And it's Michael Floyd, believe it or not.
Wow.
Michael Floyd crushed.
Whoa.
Yeah. All right. You're fine. You're fine because you're going to end up strong here. You're going to get that T-shirt. All right. You are good friends, we mentioned, with Bruce Hornsby. Where was he born? Okay. Was it Charlotte, North Carolina, Williamsburg, Virginia, Charleston, South Carolina, or Athens, Georgia? So was it Charlotte,
Williamsburg.
Williamsburg, Virginia. Bam.
Nice.
All right.
I think he was from Louisiana? No,
he's from Virginia.
Virginia. Yeah. Okay. I shouldn't know that.
All right, now you got one more. You get this one, you win the T-shirt in our forever gratitude. Which team did you hit the most home runs in your career with? You hit 30 home runs for one of these teams. Was it the Phillies, the Expos, the Cardinals, or the Angels?
You mean, heck, 29 of them had to scrape the back of the wall. I'm going to say the season after my Japanese year, I had my best 3 years with the Angels. I'd say the Angels.
The Angels is correct. And Rex, you qualify. You win a T-shirt. It's a backstage Burgoyne and Brazier T-shirt that you'll be very excited.
He'll cherish it, John.
You know, maybe we'll send one for Cade. How about that? You want us to send one for Cade?
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Send him a large. Ding, 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 ding.
Ding,
love
ding,
to hear that. Hey, Rex, that was fun, man. I appreciate that. You're bringing up some of my past there, but a lot of great names and a lot of fun, and bringing up some great memories, Bray.
Hey, Hud, when I saw you this year, I said, you know, because remember I had you on the pregame show, but I said we got to get. I turned to Tom and said we got to get Hud on the podcast. He's just too beautiful a character to not have.
Well,
on the podcast.
We appreciate you doing it. You know, we love interviewing Hud. You know, people who are passionate, people who love what they do, appreciate what they do, and you're really at the top of the list. And I know I know you do a lot of motivational speaking, and when you do, like, what's your message?
Oh, my message basically, if it's a company that sells, that they're sales people, how easy it is to get to know your product, to go out there and to sell your product, you know, to talk about it. It's all about the presentation, you know, learning things like that. Also, like to talk encouragement too. You know, for kids, I love speaking at junior colleges, and also I spoke in front of 1,000 kids in Nebraska the other day. And they wanted, it was a broadcasting class, and they wanted to know about different things in broadcasting. So it varies. I mean, I have a lot of experience in a lot of things. Love sharing about being a father and how hard that is, how to be a good husband. I mean, anybody can be a husband or a father, but can you be good at it? And that is challenging. So there's a lot of different things that I love to share from practical experience now that I'm in my 60s. But feel like I'm in my 30s. I just wish I could still play baseball, because that was the greatest thing that ever happened. It's so fun to compete against the world's greatest. And to be able to call Philly my home for a couple seasons was really something we'll never forget. And we've been lifted up ever since then. But, guys, thank you so much for giving me a chance to share again with the Phillies.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us again, Hud. We'll see you next time you come to town, all right?
All right, Rex.
Can't wait, man.
Thanks, pal.
You guys come to our house next year. Come to Kauffman Stadium and see how beautiful our ballpark is.
I think a road trip could be good to Kansas City, Tom.
We'll do it. Let's do it.
Have a great holiday.
All right, thanks, Hud. The great Rex Hudler. Thanks, Rex. The great Rex Hudler, John. How much do we love that guy?
He's the best. Well, he was somebody who only played for a year with the Phillies, but he made such an impact, as he mentioned, with having Cade Down syndrome and the charity he had behind that. And, again, he was – I've been telling Rex Hudler stories since 1997.
Yeah.
And just he's just one of these, as you saw – heard right there – he is a larger-than-life character.
He is one of a kind. I think I want to move to Kansas City and just listen to their broadcast every night because he has so many stories to tell, too. But I just love his energy, and, man, it was just great
and they
to have
used,
him
I mean, he was a broadcaster for for the Kansas City Royals. Before then, longtime broadcaster for the Angels.
Right.
He was also on a lot of the PlayStation 2, PlayStation Portable games.
I wanted to ask him about that, actually.
Yep, Xbox. So he's done a lot of that. And just again, what a – character, a complete character.
Awesome. All right, John. Well, let's do this again some other time, all right?
Sounds good.
For tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage.